Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation down south of the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is February 20, 2023. Or as Theodore 1, 2026, we will start our first service on this new moon Sabbath with a song entitled, Open My Eyes and I May See. Open my eyes that I may see glimpses of truth thus for me, placed in my hands are the wonderful key that shall unclasp and set me free. Solemnly now I wait for thee, ready my eyes I will to see. Open my eyes, illumining Spirit divine. Open my ears that I may hear voices of truth thou sendest clear. And while the wave knows fall on my head, everything false will disappear. Silently now I wait for thee, ready my eyes I will to see. Open my ears, illumining Spirit divine. Open my mouth and let me bear gladly the warm truth everywhere. Open my heart and let me prepare love with the children thus to share. Silently now I wait for thee, ready my eyes I will to see. Open my heart, illumine me, Spirit divine. Our sermon is the third part, To the Seven Churches. And we're going to be on page 49. We're going to be on page 49. And it's a symbolization of the fourth seal. That's the name of our, that's the title to our sermon. The simulation of the fourth seal taken from the seven churches, the breaking of the seven seals. And we're on page 49. The symbolization of the fourth seal. We're on page 49. Let's do a little review from the last one on page 48. To summarize, it is obvious that the command, hurt not the oil and the wine, forbade any offense with the writings of the scriptures. Again, showing that the breaking of the third seal unveiled the period in which the alphabet was invented and in which commercialism was originated. For the period in which the Bible was being written and is in which one nation's subjugated another, the period that gave birth unto empires. Hence, while the Old Testament time is closed with the third seal, the commencement of the new is unveiled and the symbolization of the fourth seal. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, Come and see. And I looked and beheld a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, and with the hunger, and with the death, and with the beasts of the earth. Revelation 6, 7, and 8. Since the pale horse falls in the same period as does the nondescript beast of Daniel 7, 7, and 8. See pages 16 and 17. The period subsequent unto the third seal, they consequently resemble each other. Indeed, its color being faint, wanting, not having a specific or definite hue, or character, the horse is in the last analysis, not the script, too. Very evidently, the rider of the pale horse is synonymous with him who spake against the Most High, with whom was to wear out the saints and think to change times and laws, Daniel 7:25. He is seen for the representative of the climax of idolatry. For the ancient Roman government is fittingly symbolized by the nondescript beast, because in the truth its administration was an admixture of the civil and religious laws of the pagan and Christian doctrine. No one could actually tell whether the Roman government was pagan or Christian, Jewish or Gentile. For the writer's name, Death, also perfectly fits the then persecuting spirit and cruelties of both the Jews and the Romans. History and prophecy alike confirmed that the Roman subversive power devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet, Daniel 7:19. Now, I brought us up to where we had just finished our last sermon to this here, Daniel 7:19, on page 50. Now, we'll continue with some new material. For the truth concerning the fourth part of the earth, over which power was given unto them for the killing with the sword, and with the hunger, and with the death, and with the beasts of the earth, is easily discovered, dividing 6,000 years from the creation unto the commencement of the millennium, into the four equal parts, gives us 1,500 years apiece. For the fourth part, and the end of which time the power was to wane. Again, it being true that the slaying of the saints began with the crucifixion of the Yahshua, this fourth part of the earth therefore began at that time and ended with the Augsburg Confession, a document compiled by the Luther and presented at the Diet of the Augsburg unto the Emperor Charles V in 1530, exactly 1500 years after the resurrection of Yahshua. Considering that the Christian era and 3.5 years predated the time that the Roman power did wane. For these deductions become even more impeachable in the light of the historical fact that the Protestant clash against the despotism finally caused the persecution to cease. So it is that this part of the scripture under discussion was fulfilled in 1530 by the weakening of the Jewish pagan and Christian pagan powers, chilling with the sword, hunger, death, and a beast. This part of the prophecy incidentally overthrows the erroneous idea that the earth has been in the existence for longer than 6,000 years. At this point, it is well to note that while the number of the horses, 4, represents the four corners of the compass, the number of the seals, 7, denotes the completeness of the gospel, the sealing of the saints. Having seen the truth of the first 4 seals unveiled, we are now to explore the symbolization of the fifth seal. And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the... Let's do that again. The symbolization of the fifth seal. And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of Yahweh, and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Yahweh, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet for a little season, and tell their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were, that should be fulfilled. Revelation 6, 9 to 11. Okay, the certainty that the souls cried from under the altar as the place from which the Yahweh's truth is dispensed makes obvious that they were slain for their firmness in the word of the Yahweh, and that for their faithfulness they were given white robes. They were counted worthy of eternity, that they were the martyrs of the preceding period. The period of the fourth seal is clear from the fact that they were already dead when the fifth seal opened. Moreover, an altar denotes renewal of the faith, reformation. That is what it meant unto Noah, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the instances that they built their altars, or when they built their altars. Genesis 8:29, 12:8, Genesis 26:25, and 35:14. For the souls being under the altar indicates that they sacrificed their lives for a cause similar unto the cause of the martyrs during the Protestant Reformation, and that the question, how long, O Yahweh, holy and true, dost thou not judge, also the answer, that they should rest yet for a little season, and tell their fellow servants also, and their brethren that should be killed as they were, should be fulfilled. Concretely prove that the persecution and martyrdom of the fourth seal were to overlap the fifth seal, and that the judgment of the dead, the martyrs, was not to begin until after the persecution had ceased, but that then it would certainly begin. For this historical sequence of the events now brings us into the time of the next events, those disclosed in the symbolization of the sixth seal. And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as a sackcloth of the hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of the heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. Revelation 6, 12 and 13. It is one of the denomination's foundational beliefs that the prophecies of the sixth seal began to be fulfilled with the Great Lisbon earthquake of November the 1st, 1755. Following the earthquake, May the 19th, 1780, the sun was darkened, and the moon appeared as the blood the following night. Then came the falling of the stars, the great meteoric shower of the November 13, 1833. The great controversy, page 304 to 309, 333 to 334. Looking forward unto these celestial demonstrations, the signs of the times, Yahshua forewarned that they were to appear immediately after the tribulation has ceased, in Matthew 24:29. So while peace, wars, commercialism, script, and persecution are the signs of the times, and the identification of the first five seals, in the like manner, the earthquake, the dark day, and the meteoric showers are the signs of the time, and the identification of the sixth seal. These global disturbances and celestial exhibitions between the year 1755 and 1883 and themselves, however, appear to be the forecast of the things that takes place during the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. If this be true, then the earthquake foreshadows the forthcoming shaking, shifting among the nations, as predicted by the prophets. Behold, the name of the Yahshua cometh from far, burning with his anger, and the burden thereof is heavy. His lips are full of indignation, and his tongue as a devouring fire, and his breath as an overflowing stream shall reach unto the midst of the neck for the sifting of the nations with the sieve of the vanity. And there shall be a bridle in the jaws of the people, causing them to err. And the fir tree shall be terribly shaken. Isaiah 30:27-28, Nahum 2:3. For the darkening of the sun would bespeak the closing of the gospel as the end of the probationary time, for the time when man shall run to and fro for the seeking of the word of the Yahweh, and shall not find it. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and a gross darkness the people. Amos 8:12, Isaiah 60:2. For the moon associated with the sun makes a fitting symbol of the church, as the agency by which the word of Yahweh, as the light of the world, is reflected. For the moon's becoming as bloody immediately following the darkening of the sun, refusing for the reflection of the light, would be an appropriate omen of the church's having finished her work of the salvation, no longer needing for the reflection of the light of the gospel or the teaching of the plan of salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, which is found mostly taught there in Hebrews 10:19-20. And the church herself is, at that time, imbued with the eternal life. This would be the everlasting kingdom of David, Daniel 2:44-45, that Yahshua brought down from heaven himself, and sits upon the throne of David right here on this earth himself, delivered from the destruction, as were the firstborn in the dwelling, where the doorpost had been painted with the sacrificial blood on the evening of the Passover in the land of Egypt. For the falling stars are suggestive of the great and terrible day of the Yahshua, as the day in which the heavens passed away, 2 Peter 3:10, the day in which all their host is dissolved. That's all them stars that you see up in the heavens, and in which the devil and his host, also the wicked in this, and the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and then and in the world shall fall down, as a leaf falleth off from the vine, and as a fallen fig from the fig tree, Isaiah 34:4, leaving only the 144,000 standing. All these signs stand as a faithful witness that the sixth seal, the sixth spirit of the time, brings a great day of the Yahweh with the wrath of the Lamb. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places, and the kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondman and every free man hid themselves in the dens of the rocks of the mountains, and said unto the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:14-17. And these verses are pictured the faith, the fear, and the smitten conscience of all who are not able for the standing in the day of the judgment of the living. For as the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, as the wrath of the Lamb, and the great time of the trouble, such as never was, Daniel 12:1, with the day following the appearance of the antitypical Elijah the prophet, Malachi 4:5. Here in these 12th parabolic hour, I'll add that part that we're in now, the harvest time, the judgment time of the earth. We're in the half-hour silence, so we're in the half-hour silence. Yes, the day in which those who have not clad themselves in a wedding garment are cast into the outer darkness as to gnash their teeth, Matthew 22:11-13. Also in these scriptures, Revelation 6:14-17, as such the spirit of the truth, two parties are brought to view. One party permitted themselves to be deceived and took sides with those with whom the Yahshua has a controversy, for they misinterpreted the messenger sent them and clothed themselves in the robes of the self-righteousness. Testimonies, Volume 9, page 268, by the Ellen G. White. Thus it is that while the first four seals carry us through the periods of the day in which the works of man are made manifest, the last three seals carry us through the day of the Yahweh, the day in which His truth and His works are made manifest. That there should be a climax of the some kind and a judicial work at this particular part of the Scriptures, Revelation 6:14-17, is not a mystery. For it being stamped with the events which end the reign of sin, and this being realized by even the sinners themselves, is a very good indication that during the sixth seal, the judgment of the dead closes, and that's what I said. The sixth seal ended with Rollis Johnson's Kermit, Texas, 2002. It brought a closure to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, because Rollis Johnson was the angel sitting in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea, the seventh church, Seventh-day Adventist. Rollis Johnson was in charge of that candlestick, giving him the office of inspiration and ability to publish the creation calendar and offer it to his brethren in the Adventist church, in which he did, and they rejected it. And the preparations for the judgment of the living began. It is a dreadful day for the wicked. Moreover, as the first phase of the judgment passes with the sixth chapter of the Revelation, with the second phase begins with the seventh chapter, that is, it begins with the sin of the living saints. The first fruits, it is a great day for the righteous. And after these things, I saw the four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living Yahweh. And he cried with a loud voice unto the four angels unto whom it was given for the hurting of the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our Yahweh in their foreheads. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel, Revelation 7:1-4. Holding the four winds, from the implication that the four winds are to blow, and the four angels are to hurt as soon as the servants of Yahweh are sealed, is seen looming with the time of trouble such as never was, Daniel 12:1. Moving from the four corners of the compass, the winds must represent a worldwide disturbance of some kind. Very obvious it is, too, that they're blowing and the angels hurting represent two armies and the conflict. For the winds blowing is the anger of the nation against the saints. And the angels hurting is doubtless the Yahshua's judgment falling upon his enemies. In other words, the angels and the winds together represent a trouble between the Yahweh and the nations, involving both the saints and the sinners. Indeed, it is the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. The wrath of the Lamb has come. For the difference between the great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world, Matthew 24:21, and the time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, Daniel 12:1, is that during the great tribulation, the saints are slain, Matthew 24:21-22. Whereas during the time of the trouble, they are delivered, Daniel 12:1. And that's what we're looking at. That's where we're at. We're in that time period right now, time of trouble. We're in Daniel 12:1. That the angels holding the wind does not denote their restraining the nations from warring among themselves. It is made clear that by the fact that the winds were not held from clashing wind against wind and nation against nation, but rather from hurting the earth, the sea, and the tree. Moreover, that the nations from the north and from the south, from the east and from the west, were engaged in the World War I and also in the World War II. Although the 144,000 are not yet sealed, is another irrefutable evidence that the trouble, which is forecast by the winds blowing and the angels hurting, is yet future. That it is a global disturbance. That's the reason it's yet future, because they beat the heart of us out writing this article in the 10th parabolic hour. And this event he's talking about, that's future, with the four and four angels, four and four, is in the 12th parabolic hour. That's in the harvest time of the last hour of prophetic time. And he didn't know, but he did say it was in the future from his time. And it is a global disturbance, as again seen in the fact that the winds on the one hand and the angels on the other hand are for the troubling both of the earth, the United States, and the sea. That's the old world where this message originated from. Where this beast that came up out of the sea originated from. It being a foregone conclusion that Satan is against the saints and that the Yahshua is against the truth, hating and evil during multitude, the subject becomes crystal clear when let loose the wind or to strike against the faithful remnant, against those who are left after the earth has opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood, the terrors, Revelation 12:16-17. But the angels who are stationed for the hurting are for the smiting of those who make war against the remnant. Those whose names are found in the book are delivered, Daniel 12:1. Seeing that the 144,000, the servants of the Yahweh, are not as yet sealed, not yet enclosed, protected, guarded, and ready for the taking of their stand with the Lamb on the Mount Zion, but rather are still commingled with the terrorists, for the angels are commanded for the forestalling of the clash. Consequently, when the sealing work is completed, then the angels who hold the winds will let the winds blow, and the angels who are to hurt the earth, sea, and trees will then commence their given work. Otherwise stated, to let the winds blow is for the permitting of the two-horned beast to decree that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Okay, Revelation 13:15. And to let the angels hurt is for the line of the Yahshua's decree to take its course. If any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of the Yahweh, which is poured out without the mixture into the cup of his indignation, and he shall be tormented with the fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb, Revelation 14:9-10. For this warning is followed by the forecast. For the four winds were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year, for the slain of the third part of men, Revelation 9:15. Both decrees will be enforced after the 144,000 are sealed. Here is seen that from among the first fruits of the harvest come the 144,000 as the servants of Yahweh for the closing work of the great harvest. For these are the first saints ever, for they having been relieved of the terrors among them. Get ready, brother, sister, for the time is at hand. For we have now seen that the first six seals reveal as the phase of the truth covering with the phase of the truth covering the history of the world from the Adam's time on until our time. For this phase of the truth is with the revealing of the sealing of the first and second fruits. From among the first fruits come the 144,000, with the 12,000 out of each of the 12 tribes of the children of the Israel, down through the centuries, for they have descended first as the Jacobites, and then as the apostolics at the cross of the 12 apostles. After these come the second fruits, the great multitude out of all nations, Revelation 7:9-17. For the theory that the living saints at the coming of the Yahshua, only 144,000 in the number, is discredited, and that it leaves no chance for even one person to be saved from a nation other than the descendants of Jacob. Not even from the descendants of Abraham, save through Jacob himself. Moreover, the theory makes the term of first fruits a vain thing, because it does not advocate second fruit. For the remainder of the revelation is wrapped in the symbolization of the seventh seal. And this is where we come to today, and the 12th parabolic hour. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in the heaven about the space of half an hour. And I saw the seven angels which stood before Yahweh. And unto them were given seven trumpets. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the first of all saints upon the golden altar, after which was before the throne, and the smoke of the incense which came up with the prayers of the saints ascended up before the Yahweh out of the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer and filled it with the fire of the altar and cast it into the earth, and there was voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake, and the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves for the sounding, Revelation 8:1-6. After a time, the judicial demonstrations with the voices saying, Holy, 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 Yahweh, Yahweh Almighty, the thunderings and the lightnings ceased for the space of half an hour, very definitely indicating that the judicial throng of the first session of the judgment adjourned. Following this, the seven angels are given the seven trumpets. In the meantime, the angels who stand at the altar offers the prayers of all the saints, takes the censer and fills it with the fire from the altar and casts it into the earth. Then it is that the heavens born fire, the thunderings and the lightnings and voices, with which the first session of the judgment opened in the heavenly sanctuary, Revelation 4:5, descend onto the earth in the reverse order, voices, thunderings, lightnings, Revelation 8:5, in addition, for which there is an earthquake, or by which there is an earthquake. Okay. Then the seven trumpets sound, one following the other, at the sounding of the seventh trumpet, not at the breaking of the seventh seal. There are great voices saying, for the kings of this world are become the kings of our Savior, Yahshua, and of our Yahweh, the Father, and of His Son, Yahshua, and He shall reign forever and ever, Revelation 11:15. Okay. And what does he reign forever and ever? Yahshua reigns forever and ever upon the throne of David, with David, with a new covenant of peace made with David and the people that he was put in charge of. And they, and antitypical King David, is placed in charge of the 12 tribes of Israel. And they become a part of this new covenant made with the house of David. And they reign forever and ever with Yahshua in charge of this kingdom. And this is Yahshua's kingdom. He rules from the throne of David forever and ever throughout eternity. this is a new thing. And I'm going to teach you that story of how it all began with Abraham coming out of Ur of the Chaldees, and how they had to go down into Egypt and stay there for 430 years, and how his descendants had come out of Egypt and go into the land of Israel. And then after they'd been there, they had to go... Anyway, I'll tell the story later on, bring it down to 144,000 to our day, how it all ended up here. I'll read it from a book. I won't tell it from my own mind. I'll read it from a book. Okay, it says, following this, the seven angels are given the seven trumpets. Following, with the following of this, is with the seven angels are given the seven trumpets. In the meantime, the angels who stand at the altar offers the prayers of all saints, takes the censer, fills it with the fire from the altar, and casts it into the earth. Then it is that the heaven-born fire, with the thunderings and lightnings and voices, with which the first session of the judgment opened in the heavenly sanctuary, that's the judgment of the dead, 1844, Revelation 4 or 5, descends onto the earth in the reverse order, and 2002 to close out the judgment of the dead and start the second phase of judgment of the living. Lightning. The voices, thunders, and lightning, Revelation 8:5. In addition, unto which there is an earthquake. Then the seven trumpets sound, one following the other, at the sounding of the seventh trumpet, not at the breaking of the seventh seal, there are the great voices saying, for the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Savior, Yahshua, no, of our Father, Yahweh the Father, and of his Son, Yahshua, and he shall reign forever and ever, Revelation 11:15. For the half hour of silence in the heaven, let's do it again. For the half hour of silence in the heaven brings the voices down onto the earth. And at the sound of the seventh trumpet, the mystery of the Yahweh is finished. Revelation 10:7. Then it is that the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Savior. Yeah, sure. What does it all mean? Just said. As we have seen, the silence divides the two premillennial judicial sessions. It says, the one for the dead and the other for the living. And I'll just give you the time for that. The judgment of the dead, the first phase, started in 1844 and ended in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, Gilead Center with Willis W. Johnson, 2002-2003. And the other for the living. Okay, so I'll give you a time on that. And the fire from the heavenly altar, for the voices, lightnings, and thunderings descend onto the earth. These facts, along with a number of the scriptures on the subject, besides the remainder of the revelation, the chapters after the breaking of the seventh seal, prove that the judgment of the living with the cleansing of the earthly temple is something that takes place on the earth, not in the heaven only. Behold, declares the Yahshua, I will send my messenger. Let's do that again. Behold, declares the Yahweh the Father, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Yahshua whom you seek shall suddenly come to his name. Let's do that again. No, that's right. And the Yahshua whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple. But who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire and like the fuller's soap. Malachi 3:1-2. Yes, the work of the second judicial session includes the earthly sanctuary, the church at that time that the Yahshua's fire is in Zion and his furnace is in Jerusalem. And that's Isaiah 31:9. And many nations shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Yeshua and unto the house of the Yahweh of the Jacob, and he shall teach us of his ways. And we will walk in his paths, for the Lord shall go forth of Zion, and the word of Yahshua from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among many people, and rebuke strong nations afar off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into the pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up a sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. But they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree. And none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of Yahshua the host, that's the Son, has spoken it. Matthew 4:2-4. Or Micah 4:2-4. Then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Matthew 25:31-41. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given unto the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter. Daniel 7:27-28. All these things definitely indicate the time in which every man shall cast away his idols of the silver and his idols of the gold, as the very thing that causes the fall of the Assyrian, the power that rules Jerusalem at the time. Yahshua delivers his people, Isaiah 31:7-8. For the truth, therefore, is trouble-free. Between the judgment of the dead and the judgment of the living stands the half-hour silence. Now, that's just what I said a while ago. We're in the half-hour silence. We're between these two judgments right now. We have been for 20 years. We have been for 20 years now. For the time absorbed in the bringing the first judicial session unto a close, and in the preparing for the second session, for the remaining verses of chapter 8, also chapter 9 to 11 give a description of the seven trumpets, with a full treatise, which is found in the tract number 5, the final warning. We are now brought unto the chapter 12 of the Revelation that deals with the subject of the ever-living church and her enemy. We're dealing with about 18 minutes left on this sermon, so it says the first of these to come in the review at the throne of the judgment is the ever-living church. And there appeared a great wonder in the heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of the 12 stars. And she, being with a child, cried, travailing in the birth and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in the heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having the 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his head. And his tail drew the 3rd part of the stars of the heavens, and did cast them onto the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman which was raised to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was called up unto the Yahweh, the Father, and unto his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of Yahweh, that they should feed her 1,260 days. Revelation 12:1-6. It is clear to see that this woman was clothed with the sun and attacked by the dragon even before her child, Yahshua, was born. Yes, years before the apostolic congregation and the gospel came into the being, to say then that she represents the New Testament church clothed with the gospel of the Yahshua is indeed as ungrounded and as illogical a theory as for the saying that the chicken is hatched before the egg is laid. Clothed with the Son, the woman is the Yahweh's ever-living church, clothed with the light from the heaven. The Bible, thy word, says the psalmist, is a light unto my path. Psalm 119:105. For the moon, as we know, is the medium by which sunlight is reflected, and the light, being under the woman's feet, is a most fitting symbol of the period before the Bible came into the being, with the period from the creation unto the Moses. For this phase of the symbolism very definitely points out that the woman was emerging from the period in which the word of the Yahweh with the Son was indirectly reflected, was passed on from the Father unto the Son, and that she was entering into the period in which she was clothed with the Yahweh's light, the Bible. And that started with Moses when he wrote the Bible coming out of Egypt 1500 B.C. Yahshua was the rock in that cloud that dictated the words to Moses to write. In that wilderness, that 40 years in the wilderness, Moses wrote it. Moreover, she was with the child at the time that she was clothed with the sun, and the moon stood under her feet. This in itself positively displays that at her outset she represents the church after it had received the promise to bring forth the world's Redeemer, the man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. He was called up unto Yahweh and unto his throne, and he is the Yahshua, the Son. For the 12 stars that comprise the woman's crown most obviously bespeaks to Yahweh's government upon the earth, the church's cumulative authority, that of the 12 patriarchs, of the 12 tribes, of the 12 apostles, and of the 12,000 out of each of the 12 tribes of the Israel, the 144,000. It is also to be observed that she portrays the ever-living church of Yahweh while in a combat with the enemy. And there appeared another wonder in the heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads, and his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them onto the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which is ready to be delivered, for to deliver her child as soon as it was born. Verses 3 and 4. If the student of the heaven inspired truth is for the knowing of the need, that needs to know the object lesson that is taught by this symbolism, he or she should now carefully notice the significance that the dragon's crownless horns and his crowned heads carry. Also, if the student of the truth is for the profiting by what the scriptures teach, he should fully realize that the preceding, as well as the following scriptural and logical considerations must be heeded. To begin with, since the dragon's horns are a group of 10, they must depict all the kings or kingdoms of then present. Just as the 10 toes of the great image of Daniel chapter 2, and also the 10 horns of the beast of chapter 7 represent the kings or kingdoms existent universally in their respective periods. Neither should be overlooked the fact that all the horns, heads, and crown were there grouped together when the dragon stood ready for the devouring of her child. Exactly as the symbolism reveals, they do symbolize a coalition of 2 separate and distinct parties, horns and heads, both existing at the same time, not one following the other, It is well to remember, too, that though the horns grow up and drop out, heads never do. God guide to a correct interpretation of the symbolical horns and heads. For the dragon's horns, being crownless, they must picture a type of the ruler similar unto those symbolized by the crownless horn of the Daniel's fourth beast, of his goat and ram, and John's scarlet colored beast, and his two horn head beasts. That is, the dragon's crownless horns indicate crownless authorities of some type, just as do the crownless horns of any of the symbolical beasts. For example, the 10 crownless horns of Daniel's fourth beast, the angel explained, depict the kings that were yet to arise from the Roman Empire, were yet to take their crowns. Later, however, the horn head having lost his power, and the envisioned kings having received their kingdom, they are thereafter represented by the crowned horns. Now the horns of the leopard-like beast, Revelation 13, the world symbol after the fall of the Rome. Again, the 10 crownless horns of the scarlet-colored beast, Revelation 17, the beast which at length succeeds the leopard-like, portray kings that have received no kingdom as yet, that receive power as the kings 1 hour with the beast, and that's exactly what we have right today. Biden represents this, the mouthpiece for that beast, our President of the United States. Revelation 17:12. In other words, having no kingdom of their own, all the while Babylon rules, arise, and he rules the beast for an hour. That's the 12th prayer body of God that we're in now, and that's what's going on right now. Well, it's been going on for 20 years. Babylon's been riding this beast for 20 years. Been ruling this beast. The horns are naturally crownless. Since these 10 horns came into the existence as a group, they therefore represent contemporary rulers. When horns represent powers that exist, one following the other, inspiration does not fail to so indicate by the showing certain horns coming up and others dropping out. For example, there in Daniel 8, of the horns of Daniel's fourth beast, they were picked up by the roots, and in their stead a notable horn head came up. In the like manner, when the goat's great horn broke off, four came up to take his place, and a fifth one, as the exceeding great horn, followed thereafter, Daniel 7 and 8. Then too, even the beasts themselves, that in their respective periods portray the world, came out of the sea, one following the other. Thus all the divine symbolization exhibits the power precisely as the time and the events cause them to appear or to disappear as the case may be. In the other words, when one power differs from another and when they do not do or do not exist at the same time, inspiration never overlooks making the distinction. If it did overlook doing so, then think how illogical, incongruous, inconsistent, and incomprehensible his teachings would indeed be, and how futile for anyone even to attempt to know the exact truth. Human wisdom has already demonstrated its inability of itself. For the comprehending of the mysteries of the Yahweh's word, even though they be delineated as perfect as only Yahweh himself can delineate. In fact, the longer a person on his own initiative tries for the explaining of the mysteries of the Yahweh, the further away from the truth he drifts. Moreover, it is not possible that the inspiration would be so illogical as to to group two different elements, those depicted by the horns and those depicted by the head, to represent one form of government. Neither is it conceivable that it would group horns and heads together if both did not literally exist at the same time. No, inspiration would not thus confuse its terms and still expect us to comprehend its teaching. We know how to interpret its symbol and when to expect the actual events to take place, and how logical would it be if the powers represented by the horns and the powers represented by the heads did not vary in the character as much as the real horns and heads. For the denotation of the heads, inspiration itself being as the only source of the information, we again go unto the prophecy of the Daniel 7. There it is seen that the fourth beast, little horn, having the eyes and the mouth of a man, actually was a horn head, a combination of the two separate elements. And it being symbolical of the church, that's the Catholic Church, and state government, that's the civil government, a combination of the civil and religious powers during the Middle Ages, settles beyond the doubt that while the horn part stands for the civil faith, the head part stands for the religious faith, logically, too, because religion should be the brains of any government. Furthermore, civil governments were originally founded upon the church government, for the symbolism thus clearly connotes that an atheistic government is about as good as any horn apart from its head. Such might even be compared unto a chicken with its head cut off. In its plight, the headless chicken jumps with the greatest force, but it knows not where it is going, and only lives but a few seconds. Moreover, the government following after the civil authority was torn away from the religious political setup of the Middle Ages is brought to you in the symbolism of the leopard-like beast, the one that sequentially follows in the line of the beast symbolism. And if the religious political governments having been dissolved is shown by a common wounded head, a religious system without the civil authority, one suffering from a deadly blow, obviously from the blow which tore away its civil authority. From this consideration, it is particularly noticeable that in all the instances where the symbolical beasts have both horns and head, the heads in every instance symbolize ecclesiastical bodies, bodies that have to do with the things of Yahweh that are likely to commingle with the sacred things of the Yahweh with the common things of the world. For the name of the blasphemy over the heads of the leopard-like beast exposed them as having committed that very sin. And now, continuing with the subject of the dragon, it can be clearly seen that in order that the consistency be maintained with the Bible's interpretation of the dragon's heads and horns must be that the former are religious bodies and the latter are the civil governments. And how many of them do the dragon's head, horns and heads depict? All the civil governments and all the religious bodies at that specific time. How do we know this? Because there are 10 horns and 7 crown heads, and because the biblical number 10 denotes universality and the number 7 denotes completeness, the tract number 3, the judgment and the harvest, the 90. Page 94, 1942 edition. From the aforementioned examples, we already see that the time has come for all the faithful Bible students, after saving truth, to realize that the inspiration never does anything vain or careless, for it works in every for its work is ever accurately constructed, always dependable at the face value, and explicit beyond the improvement. This brings the universe to this. Our contact is at the 11th hour call. It's number 11. Click on our audio archives. We're going to close now with the song. Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David. This is the 12th hour apostolic Sabbatarian congregation. Now it's at the 12th hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is November the 21st, 2015, or it is 6/10, 2019. We will start our third service on this Saturday with a song entitled The Last Mile of the Way. If I walked in the pathway of duty, if I worked till the close of the day, I shall see the great King in His beauty, when I've gone the last mile of the way. When I've gone the last mile of the way, I will rest at the close of the day. And I know the joys that await me when I've gone the last mile of the way. Before Yahshua I proclaim the glad story, I seek for the sheep gone astray, and sure He will show me His glory when I've gone the last mile of the way. When I've gone the last mile of the way, I will rest at the close of the day, and I know the joys that awaits me when I've gone the last mile of the way. In the dearest of ties we must sever, here's a sorrow seen every day, but the sick is no sign for heaven when I've gone the last mile of the way. When I've gone the last mile of the way, I will rest at the close of the day, glory in His beauty, when I've gone the last mile of the way. And if here I have earnestly striven, tried all's will to obey, fell in hands of the rapture of heaven, when I've gone the last mile of the way. When I've gone the last mile of the way, I will rest at the close of the day.